Welcome to the Continuous Delivery Podcast. My name is Chaba.
I'm Cheesy.
I'm Zurar.
Today we are going to talk about complexity. Let's limit ourselves in the context of continuous delivery. What's your first thought?
For me, it's something that I want to try to avoid, or whenever I find it, I want to pause for a short while and figure out how can I eliminate this complexity. So often, I find that complexity comes in because of dependencies or because of handoffs.
Well, whenever I hear complexity and I see complexity, it's an opportunity for me to tell everybody how complex the thing is. So they think how great I am because I'm doing all these complex things and how such a complex thing requires a better title. So whenever I see complexity, I see it as a promotion opportunity for myself.
So Zurar is just such a complex human, you know, it's all there is to it.
So. That's what I do with complexity. Chaba, how are you?
Could you give some examples? Zurar, you can start with promotion opportunities and Cheesy, maybe some things that you've seen before, whoever wants to start.
Well, I think complexity, it comes in many forms in software, right? There is like, you may have a lot of skill sets that are required on a particular team, which requires many different people. And then your team organization kind of becomes complex. The way you work together becomes complex because there's a lot of gates and communication channels that need to happen to get something. Or you may have inherited a process or come up with a process where you have, again, a lot of gates and a lot of dependencies, and that will result in complexity. I think pre-podcast, we were talking about QA and how whenever we kind of give a separate group of people or a separate team the responsibility of ensuring that our software has quality, we unknowingly introduce a level of complexity which only gets worse over time because that sort of setup does not necessarily force the team to take responsibility for the software that they are building, and they kind of punt it down the road to QA. And then QA develops its own processes to kind of combat what they are doing while developers get further and further away from the quality aspect of the process. Once that divide happens, you usually have management, you know, pyramids or management structures on developers, on QA separately. That introduces its own complexity. And then the actual software, whenever you actually find a bug or a problem, the way you communicate between the two, that is its own complexity. So complexity to me on a day-to-day, I encounter in those areas. And those are the ones that I'm usually fighting with.
I think for me, the complexity almost always comes in the form of dependencies, but two different types of dependencies. One is in the dependencies in a workflow. For example, teams that structure themselves around, you know, designers who work way up front to kind of come up with some perfect design that ultimately goes to some product folks, maybe a BA, where they start to come up with very, very detailed requirements. Who knows? They might throw in some Gherkin because, you know, that's the latest BDD thing. So let's write some Gherkin. And ultimately, that gets handed off to developers, you know, so there was no collaboration around coming up with the Gherkin. It was just about that. And the developers build something. Of course, the product owner or business analyst are busy on the next thing, so they really can't be bothered. But developers work on it. And ultimately, they hand that off to testers so that they can start going and pulling a lot more work in. You know, those dependencies go even further around. You know, I'm building something new. Oh, I got to reach out to a DevOps team to actually set up a new pipeline for me. So there's another handoff. Oh, and that there's a different group that does production verification or a different group yet that does production deployment. So that's one form of dependencies that these handoffs just add intense complexity and a lot of waste. The other form of dependency that I see that again adds a lot of complexity is where we don't slice things in a reasonable fashion. And so where we might have multiple teams that are working, each one of which has a piece to complete, each one of which, by the way, may have that original type of complexity that is described. But now we have the added complexity of, well, this piece can't be actually released until this other piece is there, et cetera. And so these two levels of dependencies just add a huge ball of mud as far as how to work in, you know, and for anybody who's working on a team, that this is not a place that's happy. It's not a happy place to work. It's a place where you want to try to find a way to escape.
It's interesting that you mentioned, because this is actually the first thing that came to my mind, which was organizational complexity, which is the structure of the organization. And I cannot help myself but quote Conway's law here, which says that any organization that designs a system will produce a design whose structure is a copy of the organization's communication structure. So pretty much the software is going to mirror the complexity of the software. It's going to mirror the organization complexities. And interesting that you mentioned Cheesy about the feature, right? Because what we try to do as much as possible to have feature teams, yet many organizations, due to historical or whatnot reasons, we're going to have these architectural layer teams where various teams are responsible for the backend, for the middleware, for database, and so on and so forth. And this hence introduces an almost like a historical, this complexity is carried forward even into modern technologies.
I'll propose, people are familiar with cyclomatic complexity, which is a pretty common metric now. I think pretty much every sonar or whatever these tools kind of give an indication of how complex your code is. And basically, I think all it does is just measure the code paths within your code and penalizes you for like nested ifs and that kind of stuff. I think if you want to measure complexity in your team, what you can start off by doing is count the number of people that are required to coordinate or talk to take the thing you are developing from your local machine to production. And I think that can be a metric that you can strive to reduce. And I think if you try to reduce that, you will transitively reduce the complexity in your working environment.
I would also add to that, Zarar, how many people did it take to touch it before you got it as well? So, you know, were there 8 people who had to touch it, approve it, sniff it, smell it, whatever, before it got onto your backlog? What does that look like? You know, so.
And I would add that why don't we just count the number of people who require to build it? Right. So if we add those up, because ideally each of them should be as low a number as possible. And actually I had just to add to that an interesting story. I had one of my clients, actually we did that. We did that counting. It was a very, very large organization and it was in the north of 100 people. In every release, more than 100 people had to be involved to put that release out.
Yeah, and which is why deployment frequency is a nice little metric from Dora, because it sort of reflects that in it. Because if you have a lot of dependencies, a lot of people require seeing and touching and smelling and sniffing or whatever Cheesy was doing there, for your code, chances are you're not going to deploy frequently. Which is why I like the Dora metrics, is because even though it sounds like a very technical metric, it's actually speaking pretty deeply into what are all the things that are going behind the scenes. And one more point on this is that, kind of building on Cheesy's point on dependencies and types of dependencies, I don't think we question dependencies enough. Whenever we look at a dependency, we sort of say, okay, that's just how things are. That's the process we use to follow. And we kind of accept it. And I know that's a pretty, pretty vanilla statement that we accept things the way they are instead of challenging it. But anytime we are able to, here's the thing. I don't think people know what a dependency is necessarily. So when they submit a PR for a code review, they think it's part of the normal process. But really a good agile mindset there could be, why am I introducing a dependency on this person? Do I really need this review? Or, constantly looking at these things and saying, is this a dependency? How do I challenge it? And I think that's one way you could work at complexity.
If we would do a value stream map, we would see that the actual work being done it could be measured in days. Yet the entire lead time, it could be weeks or could be months. So because each of those handoffs adds to that lead time.
Absolutely. So Zrar brought up Dora. You know, lead time for change is another great one that talks about that. You know, it doesn't necessarily talk about frequency, but it does talk about the amount of time, which kind of has baked into it all of those handoffs that he was talking about. But one thing that Dora doesn't cover, though, was the lean product management stuff ahead of time, you know. And so I think it's really important to measure that as well, you know, because as organizations move more and more toward continuous delivery, it's imperative that they begin to start to shorten that aspect of the entire value stream considerably, and that they start to also take a shift away from the traditional approach, which is, you know, we do a huge amount of design, we have designers up front who create something that as opposed to pushing that down into more of a very, very rapid iterative collaborative thing, so that the designers don't come up with the design, the team comes up with the design, that the product owner doesn't come up with the requirements, that the team comes up with the requirements, that a business analyst doesn't write the gherkin, that the team together writes it if they decided that it adds value, and that whenever we start to talk about experiments, again, the team collaborates to come up with the experiment, and that the team is then accountable for saying what's the minimum thing we can do to validate or to invalidate the hypothesis. So again, if we have this traditional mindset that product owns the product and they bring it to delivery, then again, we create this big handoff.
And you know, like you mentioned gherkin a couple times, Cheesy. And you know, that's a perfect example of a tool which is there to sort of bring together the development of a product and the product management aspect of a product closer together. But it has had the opposite impact a lot of the times, because people see this thing and they go, oh, this is something that I could do without really involving the developers. I could do my favorite worst word ever, pre-work. You know, I could do the pre-work to get the gherkin ready for the developers. And that sounds like a same thing to do. You know, let me just do some pre-work. Why would I not do some pre-work? And then what you do by that is you kind of assign one person the responsibility of thinking about the user, and everybody else just doing what that one person tells them to do. So gherkin, and by the way, you throw in, if it's not coached properly, then obviously you have problems with step definitions and all that stuff that go along with gherkin. But perfect example of a tool that is supposed to bridge that divide, but in its most common use does the exact opposite.
But didn't we see this with every single tool? Like organizations will try to like writing user stories, just look at the same thing. It originally, it's supposed to be a team effort, and yet it became, in some places the BA does it, sometimes the product owner does it, and again pre-work, and it's exactly the same idea.
So it's not the tool that introducing complexity, it's just the human beings who what do you think it goes through human beings' mind when they look at a tool like that? Because they don't want to introduce complexity. They don't want to make life difficult for everybody. So what's going through their mind when they misuse something like that and introduce the complexity we're talking about?
I think they're looking for a silver bullet. You know, I think that they realize that there's this enormous complexity. And, oh, I've heard of this thing, BDD. It supposedly is the hottest rage. You know, let's adopt it. And instead of taking the time to kind of actually understand it. Oh, look, there's gherkin. My BAs can write gherkin. Let's do that. So, you know, again, all of the complexity that we're talking about here is self-imposed. You know, it's all self-imposed. It doesn't have to be that way. I guess it's not all self-imposed, because sometimes companies dictate things happen in certain ways, which creates problems as well. But it really comes down to the interactions, you know, and maybe there was like some manifesto that talked a little bit about that.
And you know, like as we were talking, and I'm, you know, I have on my tab here, I was looking at the seven wastes of Agile, and And really, you can, I think complexity is just a function of these seven variables. It really is. Like if you look at it, you know, high work in process, doing too much, waiting a lot, handoffs, defects, you take all these things together and apply weights to it, and you basically get a complexity metric for your company or your team. And you know, as I'm talking this, I don't know, I think I should quit my day job and come up with that tool which will measure your team's complexity by plugging this in. I think I'm rich, fellas.
Maybe you could name it or something crazy like that.
Make one recommendation. Like just one thing that teams should absolutely do to avoid complexity.
I'll say mob. I've done a lot of mobbing over the last month, especially with a particular team who we started a new team. And one of the norms that they came up with was let's mob by default. Like that's how we will complete our stories. As a team, if you are delivering a product, you start breaking down those gates pretty quickly. Those gates that we talked about at the start of this podcast where we are waiting on people, all those gates sort of go away. And all the knowledge or most of the knowledge that's required is right there on the line, including the product owner. And I think just by having everybody there available, yeah, sometimes you might be in a mobbing session, not saying anything for a while, but when you're needed, you have something to offer right there. You just eliminated a gate and a dependency that Cheesy talked about. So I think doing that as a team, it will make your life less complex. And good news is that the learning curve for mobbing is not steep at all.
Yeah, so I think I have to agree with Sarar. Well, that's really bizarre that we're agreeing. So, but anyway, I think mobbing is an absolutely amazing technique. By default, it limits work in progress. Think about it. You know, if we can extend that up to even the way that we figure out what we're building. So the mob is no longer just like delivery, but it's also about, you know, let's ideate, think about what's the next thing, and then let's build that next thing and get it out, you know, so that we incorporate the some of the lean product side of things ahead of development. And by default, we don't necessarily have handoffs because, like Zarar just mentioned, everybody's there that's needed. WIP, the work in progress, is limited to one item, right? And if that team could take it all the way to production, I think that's an amazing approach to how we work.
And this concludes today's Continuous Delivery podcast. Thank you very much.